Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hi, everybody. And tomorrow, June 1st, is the start of the hurricane season, and there's already bad news. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is forecasting a, quote, extremely active, unquote, season this year with as many as 3 to 6 major hurricanes. But how do they really know? We don't know what the weather's going to be on Monday. Joining us to talk about these forecasts, the first after Sandy, is James Franklin. He's the branch chief of the Hurricane Specialist Unit at the National Hurricane Center. We'll also talk about lessons learned from last year, as the center will be making some changes after a Sandy service assessment came out this month, perhaps most notably on the word hurricane itself. James Franklin, welcome to WNYC. Thank you for doing this.
Good morning, Brian.
And listeners, we've got lots of questions from you for this segment already. Those of you who've been posting on Facebook, since we put it up there, you can go to facebook.com/BrianLehrerWNYC to add your own, or you can call in anything you've ever wanted to know about hurricane forecasting. We've gotten the chief of hurricane forecasts from the National Weather Service right here on the line, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So, James, there's a 70% likelihood we see this year of 13 to 20 named storms. As many as 11 of those could become hurricanes, you're telling us, and 3 to 6 of those could become major hurricanes. How does that compare to previous years or what you might call an average year?
Those forecasts are all above normal. So a normal year would be 12 named storms, 13 to 20 is the forecast. A normal year has 6 hurricanes, we're forecasting 7 to 11. And a normal year has 3 major hurricanes, so we're forecasting 3 to 6. You know, the important part of that forecast, though, really is we don't have any way of forecasting impacts. We've had busy years when all the storms were out to sea. We've had busy years when the storms were down in the Caribbean. And you know, it's certainly not a landfall forecast for the United States by any stretch.
When you say it's not a landfall forecast, despite that number of storms, you can tell us how many are expected to make U.S. landfall, not to mention New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area landfall.
Absolutely not. We have no way of knowing what part of the basin is going to be busy. You know, South Florida, 1992 is the big year when we got hit by Andrew, and it was a quiet year. So you just can't draw any conclusions about, you know, the numbers of the seasonal forecasts and what the impacts might be in your area.
How can you even make the forecasts that you are making, a 70% likelihood of 13 to 20 named storms? How can you predict those hurricanes or that number with that percentage likelihood before the 6-month season even begins? Are there specific factors that you look at?
Well, for one thing, we're in an active period. Hurricanes come in cycles. The 1940s and 50s were active. The 60s and 70s, 80s were quiet. And then since about 1995, we've been in an active period. So that's part of it. You know, we're going to be forecasting on average, above average seasons probably for the next decade or so, kind of like Lake Wobegon. But what we're looking at specifically this year is the water temperatures in the tropical Atlantic are warmer than normal. We expect them to remain warmer than normal for the next several months. And the other key part is that we don't expect the development of an El Nino. When we have an El Nino event, that tends to create very hostile conditions over the tropical Atlantic that tear storms apart. We don't think that's going to happen, and so for those two main reasons, we think it will be active.
To be clear, the El Nino effect is a hostile condition for hurricanes more than for people, right?
That's right. El Nino is warm water in the equatorial Pacific, and that leads to a lot of rising air there, which leads to very strong upper-level westerly winds in the Atlantic that tear storm apart. Yeah, when you talk to a meteorologist and you talk about good and bad, they usually have it turned around from what most people would think is good and bad.
And I like that Lake Wobegon effect. I guess it's where all the hurricane forecasts are above average and all the hurricane forecasters are good looking, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
One of the three factors that you gave us that you didn't quite put exactly the same way was continuation of the atmospheric climate pattern, which includes a West African monsoon that is responsible for the ongoing era of high activity for the Atlantic hurricanes that began in 1995. So that's the we've been above average for a long time since 1995. But what does a West African monsoon have to do with this in the Atlantic?
Well, it has, in our part
of the Atlantic, I should
say.
Yeah,
it really has to do with the source disturbances. Tropical cyclones don't just form out of nothing. You need a precursor disturbance, and most of the Atlantic hurricanes form from tropical waves that move off of Africa. They form in Africa. They move off into the Atlantic Ocean, and then some of them, maybe 10% of them, go on to develop into tropical storms and hurricanes. And so the structure of what's going on over Africa and in the eastern Atlantic has a lot to do with whether these tropical waves are strong, whether they're structured in a way that allows them to develop. And so depending on the structure of those waves, we can either have more likely development or less likely development.
James Franklin from the National Hurricane Center, our guest on WNYC, with hurricane season beginning tomorrow. Anything you've always wanted to ask a hurricane forecaster but had none around? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And as I said, we've had this question up since yesterday on Facebook, and we're getting a numbers of versions of this one question that's coming in, which is, why are hurricanes named after human beings?
That's a good question. It's just for ease of communication. You know, communication is very easy nowadays. We've got all kinds of ways of communicating, but it wasn't always that way. And if you've got two or three storms going at the same time and you're in the 1940s or 50s, you don't want to talk about the storm that's in the Western Caribbean or the one that's east of the Bahamas. You give them a name. And I think there are various naming conventions that have been used around the globe. I think in some parts of the world they were named after politicians that people didn't like, people's girlfriends, folks in the military started doing that. And in fact, we had only women's names in the Atlantic till about 1979 or 1980, I think, was when we went equal on that, men and women's names.
I understand that New York and New Jersey are most at risk of hurricanes hitting here in August and September. Why those parts of the season?
It has to do with where the source disturbances come from. So the kinds of systems that would affect the upper east coast of the United States typically are those long track systems that form from tropical waves that come off the coast of Africa. Now, early in the season, we start getting tropical waves about this time of year, but the waters in the tropical Atlantic haven't warmed up enough yet. Normally, the upper-level westerly winds, which tear storms apart, are still a little too strong. The kinds of areas where we have development in June and July are in the Gulf of Mexico, and in fact, we're going to need to be watching the Gulf of Mexico next week for possible development, or the Western Caribbean. So those are the threatened areas normally early in the season, and again, very late in the season. In the middle is when you get these tropical waves, the classic Cape Verde hurricanes that come up and threaten the East Coast.
Of course, Sandy wasn't until late October.
That's right. So it really can happen anytime. It's just the odds are better when you get into September and early October.
And Sandy wasn't a normal hurricane. It was this unique confluence of a couple of different kinds of storm systems, wasn't it?
Sandy was a very, very strange system. It began as a very classical October hurricane in the Caribbean, but then it interacted with a couple of different weather systems coming off the North American continent deformed it and evolved it into a very, very large, complex hybrid-type system by the time it reached New York.
Let's take a phone call. Here's Frank in Manhattan. Frank, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, thanks. I just bought a home on Sanibel Island in Florida, and someone had mentioned to me that with the increasing severity of hurricanes, it was possible, actually, that the lower part of Florida would sustain less damage because these storms will just be more and more powerful, and they tend to barrel up and hit the Panhandle and Louisiana and the Gulf Coast. Is there any truth to that?
So South Florida, in general, by that forecast, would be more likely to be spared. Have you heard anything like that?
I can't imagine that there's anything of virtue in that line of thinking at all. South Florida is just as much at risk as it always was, and if I were in Sanibel, I would certainly be prepared for strong storms.
Miles in Connecticut, you're on WNYC with James Franklin from the National Hurricane Center. Hi, Miles.
Hi, how are you? I was curious as to, last year I seemed to notice a pattern, maybe I'm wrong, that of hurricanes forming or tropical storms that didn't seem to come out of Africa but were just forming further north at more northerly latitudes. And my question is important to me because I'm planning to sail across the Atlantic in a week's time in a 35-foot well-equipped sailboat. Also, I saw, you know, hurricanes hit the Azores, which hadn't happened since 1955, and the Azores is one of my destinations.
Well, the seasonal forecast, again, doesn't specify what part of the basin is going to be active. So, you know, we could see a lot of activity in the deep tropics, or we could see, as you said, these kind of subtropical kind of developments. We do have years where more of the developments are further north, and then we have other years where the tropics predominate. We do think the deep tropics this year is going to be favorable for more southerly formations, but you know, that doesn't mean that we're not going to have one when you're sailing out there.
Thank you for your call, Miles. Before you go, I want to talk about the way forecasts are communicated to the public, because as you well know, there was confusion around Sandy, and I don't know if that confusion wound up making it worse for people, but we're talking about hurricane season, and yet when Sandy made landfall in the United States, it wasn't technically a hurricane. It had been downgraded to what you call a tropical cyclone. And one of the headlines of the service assessment released a couple of weeks ago, your assessment of how Sandy was handled, was that this was a bad move. How come?
Sandy evolved from a tropical cyclone to a post-tropical cyclone, actually. And that did cause us some problems because different parts of the Weather Service are responsible for different kinds of weather systems. So, you know, as is the Hurricane Center, we don't do tornado warnings and vice versa. That was a problem here because we had a system that was forecast to transition from one type to another type shortly before making landfall. You know, it was interesting, some of the social science research done afterwards is that people thought they were under a hurricane warning, even though they really weren't. So I wonder if people really ended up getting pretty much the right message. But to try and minimize that confusion in the future, we have changed some of the rules that we operate under. The Hurricane Center will now have the ability to retain authority over a system even after it's no longer a hurricane. So we would continue to be able to write advisories. We would continue to be able to put a hurricane warning up. And so if Sandy happened again this year, New York City would get a hurricane warning, and it would stay up even after the storm evolves into something else. So we want to provide more continuity of service. We want to make sure the message is cleaner, and this year we'll have the ability to do that.
So if there's, let's say, Hurricane Mandy this year, and it seems like it's going to be technically downgraded to something like a post-tropical cyclone, you're still going to issue a hurricane warning for the New York area, because that's not going to signal to people that they can drop their guard, right?
That's right. We've broadened the definition of a hurricane warning where it can remain in place, you know, assuming the winds are going to be strong enough, even if the storm is not technically a hurricane. And more importantly, we would continue to put out the same products that we would put put out, even while it was a hurricane. So it'll be a seamless service from the same part of the Weather Service, even as these things transition.
And in our last minute, I want to note that the WNYC Data News team has made a new hurricane tracker, which will track every named Atlantic storm this year. It uses live data from the National Hurricane Center, and it'll be on the WNYC website as soon as the first storm develops. And before you go, the sequester, which, you know, everybody hates to talk about, but here it is again. It isn't immune to the sequester. The National Weather Service is not. Funding from the Sandy aid package we see has been cut by the sequester, and you've had to furlough some forecasters. How worried are you about those cuts as hurricane season starts in relation to public safety?
We haven't gotten the final word on the furloughs. What we've been told is that we will likely have to furlough each forecaster for 4 days, and myself included. We hope that we can schedule those furlough days when the weather is relatively quiet. There certainly is a provision in the event of a weather emergency to reschedule the furlough days, so we're going to try and make it work as best we can.
James Franklin, Branch Chief of the Hurricane Specialist Unit at the National Hurricane Center, thank you very much for filling us in on some of what to expect with the new hurricane season, which begins officially tomorrow. Thanks so much.
It's my pleasure.
And what should we expect in New York City to mitigate future storms? Well, if you like those retractable domes in the ballparks, you may like Mayor Bloomberg's reported plan for removable steel seawalls. We'll get the details in a minute.